This is CliffCentral.com.
What are the three things that wound the hearts of men? And what are the biggest misconceptions about masculinity that society pushes on all of us? Welcome back to episode 4 of this exciting series in everything man, masculine, manhood. And again, it's Craig Wilkinson here in studio with my partner Khalil Osiris. Carling Black Label is a proud sponsor of Man to Man Talks. Join us in standing up and saying no to woman abuse, because enough is enough. Champions take action. Khalil, just so great to be back talking about this awesome subject.
It's amazing. In between the time that we've done our first recording of this, I've talked with a number of young men who have said they cannot wait to participate in a broader discussion around the topics that we're raising in this series. And so what was just really heartwarming for me was the number of young men that I've talked with who have expressed excitement in it and an absolute craving for this kind of conversation to happen with them. So, again, I'm grateful for the opportunity for us to be doing this as Man-to-Man Talks.
It's wonderful. I mean, what you're saying just reminds me, we do a lot of work in, you do a lot of work in prisons and schools. I've done a lot of work in schools and universities, and the number of times that I've seen young men, you know, I'm talking teenage young men, boys, and we start talking into their lives as older men and just say, you know, you've got what it takes. You're the man. They just come alive. There's, as you said, there's just a hunger. There's a craving. I mean, I never forget the story many years back, maybe not that long, 5-6 years ago, we were at a camp and we were doing this process of calling each other out as men. And I had the privilege of calling out a guy called Patrick. And he was a 62-year-old man. And part of the process was I put my hands on his shoulders and I looked him in the eye and I said, Patrick, as a man, I see you a man. I acknowledge you a man. You stand here as a man amongst men. And tears just started pouring down Patrick's eyes. He was just, then he started sobbing. And, you know, we just gave him space to do that. I mean, that's one thing us men are not good at doing, is crying and watching other men cry. But he cried and cried. And at the end of it, he said, Craig, you know, you spoke to something in me that I never knew existed. He said, all my life I've carried this desire to be validated and affirmed by a man, and I never had it. And this just opened up something.
Absolutely. And the fact that it's okay to share your heart in that kind of way, to be open and honest about the kind of emotional needs that we have as men, that can be addressed in ways that are healthy and that grow us as men, and inspire us as men, to reach for our higher angels, to open ourselves up to new possibilities about how we can express manhood, our masculinity, and be an example and or as a role model for other young men in particular. But we must never lose sight of the fact that also there are a number of older men, even elderly men, who have never had the opportunity to participate in this kind of conversation. I mean, you know, like you and I mean, we're in our 50s, so we were raised in that generation where big boys don't cry, and you don't have a lot of conversation with your father about these kinds of things, because they're busy working and providing and doing all the things, other things that are important. But increasingly, we're seeing a need by all men of every age group to embrace the fact that this is vital for our personal well-being.
It doesn't take away from your manhood, masculinity, or strength in any way.
Not at all.
In fact, it enhances it. You know, we started in the last podcast talking about how men are wounded. And I think we quoted the John Eldridge quote that says, every boy in his journey to become a man takes an arrow in the center of his heart in the place of his strength. And because that wound is very rarely discussed and even more rarely healed, every man carries a wound. I remember you telling me a story of when you wanted to work out with your dad.
Yes.
I mean that was a moment for you of a deep wound. I mean, share that story.
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, I'd always loved sport, and being athletic and understanding that it required of me something extra than my God-given talent. One of the coaches who really kind of mentored me would always suggest that, look, do the extras. It's not what you have. It's what you're able to develop out of what you
have. Right, right.
Do the extras. And so there were a group of boys who all of us agreed that we would meet and do workouts, and we'd all convince our dads to come because we thought that was just kind of like a big thing. And, you know, boys also want to show off when their dads are there.
Right.
So it would kind of motivate us at a different level. And so this group of friends I had, they all went and asked their dad, would they come? And I went to my dad and I said, Dad, I would you come and work out with me? We're going over and we're doing this these extra activities for the sport team. And he looked at me. He says, boy, I don't work out. I work. And I was so wounded by something. I mean, I know that he did not intend to hurt me in saying that. I'm crystal clear. I couldn't have had a more loving father.
Right.
Understanding that his priority was on providing. And for him in that generation, nothing was more important than providing for your family.
Yeah.
And so he committed himself wholeheartedly to that. But when I had a need that went beyond his providing for the family and expressed that, just his failure to grasp the importance of that for me at that time was hurtful.
Yes.
And fortunately, over the years, I had an opportunity to come to terms with, you know, how important his contribution was as a father and providing. But one of the lessons I took from the key lesson I took from that experience is with my own sons. I mean, we actually have a kind of pack where I always keep myself fit and I'm ever prepared to work out with them. And in fact, I always say to them, there will be some exercise that I'm able to do no matter if I'm 90. That will exceed what they can do. So, what I did was to make it simple for myself was I looked at the exercises that they least like to do, and the
one you focus on those.
Oh, I don't know. That's my strength. So, for me it was sit-ups. I knew that sit-ups was going to be a tough call for them to do. So I excelled in doing sit-ups. And even to this day, I mean, that's one of my favorite exercises. So anytime we're doing any kind of, having any kind of discussion, I'm telling them we're going to, let's go work out. Let's start with the sit-ups. If you can't get off the floor from the sit-ups, we don't even need to talk about the rest.
but what's interesting, I mean, that wound, that hurt, that pain actually drove so much of your behavior. I mean, I think it's Barack Obama who said, most men spend their whole lives looking for the blessing and approval of their father, or else trying their very best not to be like their dad.
Absolutely.
And I mean, I think most men have those points, those moments, like if they think back where that happened, I don't work out, I work, where the cry of the boy's heart is there to the father, and the father's not there to answer the cry. And as you say, it's most often not malicious, but it happens and it hurts. It hurts the young boy because we need the affirmation of our father. We need our father to say, son, you've got what it takes and I'm there for you. You're my beloved son. I'm with you. You know, and very few of us get that.
Yes.
And so what John Oliver was saying, that every man, virtually every man grows up and we have a wound, and the primary wound is this father wound. What's interesting too is about the wound of a man. We talked about the father wound and we talked about the mother wound.
Yes.
How often moms, in being overprotective and perhaps emotionally demanding of their son, they give him the message, you don't have what it takes. So he grows up believing he's not the man, not man enough. But society plays a massive role too, doesn't it? I mean, we were talking earlier about the messages around masculinity that are portrayed in society. And we talked about the four big lies. It's basically sex, power, money, and big boys don't cry.
Yes.
And every one of us grew up with those misperceptions about what it means to be a man.
Completely. I mean, if you think about it, for most men, one of the first measures of masculinity is your interaction with women.
Right.
And so you will commonly hear stories of and even see personal examples of the men who in your life who have who are most attractive to women or who have the most number of women at their beck and call.
And it becomes a measure of your manhood.
Absolutely speaks volumes about what kind of, that you're a real man, number one.
Right.
And that you are such a real man, such an alpha male, that virtually all the women are going to be attracted to you.
Right, right.
So there's this delusional sense
yes.
that your masculinity is actually validated by the fact of how many women you have. And you look at the number of professional athletes and others who have talked openly about it. I mean, there's a story of Wilt Chamberlain, an American late American absolute all-star basketball player, who in his autobiography talked about he was with something like 100 women in one night.
Hmm.
Now, every guy knows this is just physically impossible.
Right.
Yet he had to say it in his own autobiography.
Right.
To boost the ideal of
he's the man.
Super. He's the man. The yeah. super.
The ultra
man,
ultra the, alpha.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's just it leads to such caricatures.
It really does.
Of what manhood is.
And it's such a lie. I mean, I remember watching a particular movie. I forget the name of the movie. I think it was called Hall Pass. And in the movie, it was these four guys, you know, middle-aged guys that they were hanging around a park. I don't know if you saw the movie.
Yeah, I did.
And they said, I mean, they all had their stomachs. And they said, you know, man, if we weren't hitched, you know, to our oppressive wives, we could have all these, you know. And the wives got wind of this and said, okay, guys, you know, you go for it.
You
got a week to do whatever you want. And I mean, none of them. I mean, but what was interesting was the one scene where the one particular guy did manage to get a young woman interested in him, and she kind of took pity on him, and she said, you know, I'm gonna. So there's a scene of him in the hotel room, and she actually takes her top off and exposes her breasts, and she's a beautiful woman, and this guy looks at her, and he looks at his ring, and even though he's been given permission,
yes,
he says, put your top on, no. And you know, for me,
right.
that is a man. I mean, a guy
sure.
who can say no.
Yes.
I don't want this, actually. I mean, that's true. So the lie is that you need to be the guy who can, but actually the real man is the guy who doesn't need that.
Who's validated by things that have nothing to do with it.
And even
conquering women.
Absolutely. So, I mean, that lie, the whole woman lie, I mean, the sex lie and the power thing to you. I mean, we see this. The need to be powerful. We see it in businesses. We see it in churches. We see it in homes. The sense that if I'm powerful, and it goes down to biceps too. And you know, guys in the gym, and you know, I mean, you get into a gym, and you know, if there's another guy watching, you're gonna push a lot harder because there's this whole thing of I need to be powerful. If I'm not powerful, I'm not the man.
Completely.
Yeah.
And so it leads to again, the caricatures.
Right.
Of
right.
what masculinity, what manhood really is. And we perpetuate it.
Right.
We're
right.
complicitous in it as men. We perpetuate the lies
absolutely
by our participation
yes.
in this craving for power, in
right.
this desire to have the most money. It's like, right. you know, whoever has the most toys win.
Absolutely.
And you look at that and you begin to ask yourself, especially if you think about the average guy.
Yeah.
Just the average John or Joe that's out there, or tobacco, or whatever, whoever that person
yes, yes,
is,
yes.
that's your average guy.
Right.
Look, it's unrealistic to think you're going to grow up and be a multimillionaire.
Absolutely.
It's unrealistic to think that the majority of women that you meet are going to fall for you. I don't care how handsome
yeah.
you think you are, and I don't care how much power you believe you have. Ultimately, you'll find that even the women that do come to you will very often be participating in the lie as well.
100%. Yeah, the lie that they've had.
The lie that they've been told about what real masculinity is or what manhood looks like.
Right.
And so you end up in a relationship that's basically without any substance.
Absolutely. And, all of this, we're talking about what wounds men. So men grow up and they look at – I mean, I saw an advert the other day just – this guy arrived in a Lamborghini, beautiful sports car. He got out the car and he had two beautiful women with him, one on each side. And he went into the building, went up, took the lift to the top story, and there was this pub. And he obviously, became apparent he owned the building. And it started raining at this rooftop pub, but the clouds were low, so he clapped his hands. And there was a hydraulic system that raised the pub above the clouds, you know. And I mean, so you look at this, it's so ludicrous. The entire picture of that was He's got two beautiful women. He's very wealthy, and he's got lots of power. And he's the man. So, I mean, the wound for us, Khalil, growing up is, apart from, you know, not the father wound and the mother wound, is looking at the society and never measuring up. I mean, we don't measure. No one measures up to that.
No one.
Even the guys that we don't. And it doesn't make us any less of a man. But we think we are because we don't measure up. I mean, I never forget arriving at my kids' school. They went to a fairly affluent school, and I arrived in a borrowed car because my car was in the garage being repaired, and it was this beaten up old Mazda thing, and I pulled in and I saw these Range Rovers, and immediately my immediate response was to turn off and wait until they passed because I didn't want them to see me in this this car. But I said to myself, Craig, man, that is just so foolish. I mean, you're acting out of a wounded masculinity. You're acting out of a sense of, in order to be a man, you have to have the same level of a cause. That if you don't, you're not the man.
Yeah, right.
And it's a wound that we carry as men because we go through our whole lives competing and trying to be the man when actually we are. You talked about the average Joe or Toboho or whatever.
Yeah.
They are the man.
Oh, no doubt.
They are the man.
Day in and day out.
Absolutely. They don't have to have.
You know, Craig, that you triggered a memory of experience I had with my youngest son. I had just gotten out of prison. I'd been out about 6 months, and I managed to save up enough money to buy a car from this private owner. It was like an older model Buick, and it looked to be pretty well kept, but it was just a really older model car. And my son, I'd have to pick him up from practice, baseball practice, and then we'd drive home. But what happened after about 2 months with this car, when we get on the highway, we get to about maybe 60 kilometers or 60 miles an hour driving, and the car would start to lose speed on the highway.
Right.
So all of these cars would be passing us on the highway once I got to about 60.
Yeah.
And so one day my son looks at me, and, you know, every day I was wearing a suit, had a tie for my job and everything. My son just looked over me and started laughing, and he said, Dad, look, could you at least take off the suit and tie while you're driving me home? Because it looks so ridiculous that every car passing us realizes that, like, they're laughing at us, Dad, and you're sitting here trying to look serious in this car. Either get a new car, Dad, or take off the suit
and
jacket.
Right.
And I was so hurt by that, But of course, and then ultimately I just looked at him, and we both burst out laughing because
it doesn't matter.
It doesn't. I was like, that was time that I had never been able to spend with my son.
Wow. And if it's all about the money, you lose what it actually is all about.
If we would have been driving home in a Lamborghini and had no conversation and never laughed, how horrific.
You would have been more impoverished.
That would have been.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
I look at that experience today, and even now my son and I, my youngest son and I, we laugh about that because we could see just how pretentious it was in terms of recognizing that it's not about the car, actually. Right. It's about the relationship.
100%. So we got these misconceptions about manhood. But the problem is and that's the fourth lie, real men don't cry, which means we don't talk about these things. I mean, men, we grow up as men, and we're taught not to be vulnerable or share our feelings. Do you know, I read a crazy stat the other day. In the United Kingdom, in the UK, the single leading cause of death in men under 50 is suicide.
Amazing.
Is suicide. There's something like, I forget, I think it's 58 men every week in the UK.
Die of suicide.
And if you look at why they do, and five times more men commit suicide than women, five times more. I mean, the differential is huge. And I think one of the fundamental reasons is, number one, we're expected to live up to the Superman image of the guy's got it all together. But number two, we don't talk about it. You know, when we do have issues, I had a friend earlier this year.
Oh, I know. I remember you telling me about this.
Who took his life in his 50s, and it was an absolute tragedy for
him. But Craig, tell me, I think our listeners need to hear that story.
Yeah.
Just in terms of the note he left and the thinking that he had that led to his suicide. Yeah. Just kind of elucidate that.
Well, firstly, none of us in the friendship group knew what he was going through. He hid it. He wasn't vulnerable. He didn't share it. He was this strong guy, you know, together guy, had made some good money in his life, sent his kids to private schools, and he kept this image together. I mean, when we would go out for dinner or drink, whatever, he didn't reveal a thing. But behind the scenes, he had lost all of his money in the stock exchange, but he couldn't tell anybody.
Wow.
And he was carrying this burden, and he couldn't tell his kids, and he didn't stop, he didn't change the lifestyle. So he felt a need to maintain the lifestyle, and he felt like he couldn't share it with anyone because it would detract from who he was as a man. And so in his note, and he left meticulous notes and videos and things, he said he had a kid of 19 and a kid of 17. So he left behind two beautiful children. But his view was this. He said that, and he had an insurance policy which he knew would pay out even on suicide. His view was that I'm worth more to my family dead than alive. So his concept was, I'd rather leave this insurance payout, and they're okay financially. They need that more than they'd mean. I mean, this is the misconception that he had about, and the devastation, Khalil, that he left. Devastation with his kids and wife and family. And his perception of manhood was so skewed by these lies that society tell, and the fact that as a man he couldn't share. You know, all of us, as his friend said, you know, one phone call. Had he just reached out, we would have saved him. We would have said, this doesn't matter. None of this matters.
It doesn't. You know,
I mean, a child would rather have a dad who has no money and no car, who works in a menial job, that he can go and hug and talk to and look in his eyes, than have millions and millions of dollars or rands and no father.
And absent. I mean,
absolutely.
That story for me is a metaphor for how distorted and delusional we become in our thinking, and how we ultimately fail to come clean,
right?
Just as men. Like, what is it about being a man that makes you believe that money
makes you
money defines who you are?
And I
understand all the social dynamics of the trinkets and having the most toys and being able to walk into a place and say, you know, drinks for the whole bar, or going out to the restaurant and you got all your friends and wanting to take the tab.
Right. Because you're the man if you
can
do that.
You're the man. If you can do those things, you truly are the man. But if that becomes a mask for being authentic in your relationships with other men, particularly the ones who you know love you.
Right.
And that who deserve your truth.
Yeah.
And that's the other side of it. Those who people deserve our truth.
They do.
And we deserve to be able to share it.
There's such peace and strength and wholeness in that, isn't there?
Yes.
But we feel we grow up with this wound. I'm not man enough. And therefore, I have to put on the mask, and I have to. And it all stems from this woundedness, doesn't it? I mean, number one, from the dad. I mean, a dad who affirms his son, says, son, you're the man. It doesn't matter how well you perform, how many women you've got, how powerful you are or not. Who you are is enough. If he gives his son that message, the son grows up not needing this stuff, does he? He doesn't have to prove himself to be the man.
No.
Because the wound's not there.
The wound is not there. We are able to address it when it is present, in a way that's healthy.
Absolutely.
In a way that heals.
Absolutely.
And by modeling it, what we provide is a pathway for our own sons to be healers in the world.
Very much so. It's a cycle. Whether it's a negative cycle or a positive cycle. We start a cycle. It's transgenerational. Khalil, it's also worth mentioning, I think, in the last part of this podcast, around the way media depicts men. I mean, there's been such a backlash against men behaving badly, hasn't there? And we're going to talk in the next episode about why men behave badly, what drives that behavior. But because of that, you see so much in media men either portrayed as absolute assholes.
Yes.
You know, the macho idiot, you know, or you see men portrayed as totally incompetent idiots, don't you? You see that so much. I mean, we're talking about the recent movie Ghostbusters, where every man in that movie was portrayed as someone who was just imbecilic.
Yes.
And so this is the image that young boys are growing up with. You know, men are, you know, women can multitask, men cannot multitask. You know, women are fully competent. I mean, and that's fantastic to bring that message, because I don't think that's been out there enough. But the contrary to that is that men are portrayed as, you look at Homer Simpson, you know, the cartoon character. I mean, he's You know, what's the wife's name?
I forget her name, but it's
but she's fully together.
Is so well.
But he's such an idiot. He's such an idiot. I mean, he can't string a sentence together. Emotionally incompetent. I mean, a total imbecile. There was another sitcom, Married with Children. I don't know if you remember that one. I mean, that's that guy too. He was such an imbecile, wasn't he? He was just a useless man, useless father. And that's how men are often being portrayed.
Yes, and you know the interesting thing about that to me, it triggers memory that I have about when I first heard about there was a movie in America called The Color Purple.
Right.
And it was a sensational commercial hit. Oprah Winfrey did it, starred in it, was just an amazing story. And it focused on the African-American experience. And the man in the movie, the main male character was a guy named Mister.
Right.
And what ended up happening is that Mister was revealed to be a person who was molesting his own children, his own family. I mean, he was such a psychologically wounded man that he committed some really horrific acts of sexual abuse and gender-based violence. I mean, this was a classic case of it. And there was a huge, huge debate in the African-American community around this movie, and it created quite a bit of consternation on the part of many African-American men. And one of the things that came up in discussions around this movie was that for too long in the African-American community, we have been unwilling to acknowledge this level of abuse going on within our families. Right. It's been like this
shame.
It's the shame and the secrecy around it. And I couldn't help but think how many women grew up holding themselves responsible for men who abused their power as men and who committed these horrific acts. So, and I'm saying that to basically say to our listeners, we're not trying to duck responsibility for the abuse that we commit as men. We're saying that, you know what? No excuses.
Right.
There are no excuses. As men, we step up to the plate. And I personally, I mean, I take the position of Maya Angelou. Nothing human is foreign to me.
Right.
So when a man behaves poorly, when a man is abusive and sexually violent against anyone, then as a man, I'm perfectly prepared to say that I take ownership for being part of the solution.
Right.
I cannot be held individually accountable for his individual misbehavior, his individual abuse. But what I can do is say that I am going to make myself accountable for being an example of how men should conduct themselves.
Right.
And so we want our listeners to know, the men who are listening, please don't think that because it's not you personally who's doing this horrific behavior or abusing women, or you don't recognize yourself in that scenario that men are hashtag men are trash. Don't take that personal. Mm-hmm. What you ought to take personal is the fact that you share in the responsibility to be a better example.
Right. And Khalil, I think it's so important to look at the average guy, you know, the guy who is not abusive. He's not, you know, he's not particularly bad in any way, but for us each as men to actually look at ourselves inside and say, you know, inside me is a boy. And that boy had needs growing up. And that boy had questions. And he brought the questions to his father. And in the absence of the father, he brought them to his mother. And he brought them to the media and to the world. And in many ways, you know, almost no man have those questions been properly answered. And so the average guy carries the sense of, am I really enough? Am I enough? And in the extreme case of what you're talking about now, where men resort to abuse, I mean, that's a power thing, isn't it? It's a need to express power, aggressive violence. Why? Because I don't feel like I'm enough. I need to prove myself as a man.
Precisely.
And I think all of us as men need to just look in the mirror and say, you know, I carry a wound. There are times when I don't feel man enough. When I'm next to a very manly man in the worldly sense, I feel like I'm not quite enough. When I see a guy who's driving a car better than mine, I feel inadequate. When I feel a guy's got a very beautiful, I don't feel enough. And this, I think, is so important for us as men. We all carry this, all of us.
Yes.
Even the super athletes that you were talking about, I mean, they still feel a need to go out there and get more women and have more sex and more. Why? Because they still feel inadequate. We look at them and they're muscle bound and they're successful and they're wealthy, but they still feel less than.
Look, because you can tell it, Craig. You can see it. Here it is. You have a professional athlete. He's got a wife. He's got children. He travels around the country and around the world playing sport, being paid millions and sometimes tens and hundreds of millions of dollars for his talent, and has a woman in every city.
Right.
A woman at every place that they have a game. He's quite content, and actually in some cases compete with some of his peers on how many women they can have. I just think that comes out of the woundedness and
absolutely.
This whole kind of maniacal desire for power.
Right. Those men are not okay. No matter what it looks like on the outside, they're not okay. And in that sense, they reflect the average guy who also doesn't feel quite okay inside. And I think, you know, we're gonna move on in forthcoming podcasts to what is the solution for this? How do we find healing for ourselves? But I think, you know, for us to give permission to every man to look inside and say, you know what, inside me, to some degree or another, inside this strong, mature man is a wounded boy. And sometimes a wounded boy does things which are not rational or good, or sometimes a wounded boy makes me feel in a way that's not great. I feel less than, and I can't share it because, you know, the world says that, you know, real men don't cry. I think we need to give ourselves permission. We are wounded.
And that is exactly right, Craig. And you know what? We have to ask ourselves very seriously and be deeply reflective about what has informed our idea of masculinity.
Right.
And clearly, if you have relied on the media, popular culture, to define what real masculinity is, what healthy manhood looks like, you are in a lot of trouble.
Absolutely.
You are going to damage a lot of people, particularly the ones who you say you love.
Starting with yourself.
Starting with you.
And I think that's the key. You know, for us to realize, gosh, we've grown up in this world, which is not perfect. We've grown up imperfectly fathered, imperfectly mothered, and we carry this inside us. And how do we, as men, deal with this, almost refather ourselves, and get to a point where we are behaving as true men? So, Khalil, I think we've come to the end of the time, but what a fantastic conversation. Next podcast, we'll talk about why men behave badly.
Looking forward to it.
In a country where 1 in 2 women are victims of abuse, it's important that we take the time to discuss a way forward, man to man. Carling Black Label is a proud sponsor of Man to Man Talks with myself, Craig Wilkinson, and Khalil Osiris. Drink responsibly, not for sale to persons under the age of 18.
This is CliffCentral.com.